the O and the Dub. Welcome to Junior, the CHL podcast with Jeff Merrick and Sam Cosentino. From now until the MasterCard Memorial Cup, this is the destination for news, opinion, and prospects. No one does the CHL like this.
Well, Sam, here we are once again, another edition of Junior, your favorite CHL podcast. This week at a regular time on a regular day, Wednesday. Last week did it a day early because, Sam, it was the BMO CHL NHL Top Prospects game. It was another romp for Team Aura over Team Cherry. We saw the money exchanged on the ice between the two friends that stretched back a number of years. But when you look back at this, and now you've had a week to reflect on it, what's going to jump out most to you? For me, it was a performance of Timo Meier, but who was it or what was it for you last week in St. Catharines?
It was Travis Konecny for me and Liam Herbst. It's the two Ottawa guys. And for similar reasons. For Travis, first of all, he came into the year as a highly touted guy, you know, a top 15 guy, and, you know, didn't get off to quite the start and, you know, kind of took a bit of a downturn. Ottawa wasn't really that great to start the year. And now the 67s are starting to play well again. And a big part of that is Travis Konecny. So you adjust to a new coach, you adjust to the draft year pressure. And I think he showed off some of the things that may have vaulted him back into that, you know, top 20, top 15 conversation. I was really happy for him. He's a dynamite kid. If you know the person and you combine it with the skill, it takes some of the edge off what's a smaller player. Liam Herbst has to be the other guy for me, Jeff. I mean, his story, a story of perseverance, a story of almost quitting the game, for him to come in and play as well as he did, getting the call at the last second, that was really, really cool for me to witness that, because I hadn't known Liam until meeting him the other night in the hallway and after the morning skate. I'd been following his story, obviously, and he was thrilled. We walked down the hallway towards the Timor room, you know, after the morning skate, and he was in there taping a stick, and he goes, "Hey, oh my gosh, it's the guys from Sportsnet. Hey, nice to meet you, Sam. Nice to meet you, RJ Falzi. You know, nice to meet you guys. I watch all the time. I'm really excited to be here." So that to me was a really two cool things of guys who, as younger players, have kind of just had to deal with some adversity. Konecny's obviously more in the present, but Herbst's, you know, going back a couple of years, you must have felt something pretty good when you saw Herbst play the way he did.
He was exceptional. Was it 24 saves, I believe, that he made in the game coming on as a second goaltender for Team War? He was exceptional. But to the point about Konecny, too, I mean, he was put in a really favorable position. I mean, you're playing with Connor McDavid. You're playing with Timo Meier, who was the one guy that jumped out for me because I haven't had a chance to watch Timo Meier up close this year. Mm-hmm. So he was the guy that really turned my head. But I was happy for Konecny because going into this, you know, you look at players and you say to yourself, okay, this guy's not going to hurt himself if he has a soft game. Like Mitch Marner, for example, you know, didn't have the biggest game of his, but he didn't really need to. Like the body of work is there. You look at guys that may have struggled a little bit out of the gate this year, and who needs to have a big game to put themselves back in a conversation they were once in? And that conversation quickly this year went to Travis Konecny. So to me, I was happy to see the young man excel at the upper level, to the point where, if you saw the Rob Falds interview afterwards with Connor McDavid, he said, "Yeah, you know what, Timo Meier and Travis Konecny were doing great. I was just along for the ride on this game." You know, you've really done something when Connor McDavid's on your line and says, "Ah, I was just along for the ride." These two guys were standing out. Another guy that really caught my eye, and then we saw him again on Sunday, and part of the conversation in our intermission, Sam, was the way that he skated and the comparisons that Todd Warner made to Jay Bouwmeester. I was really impressed with Brendan Gooley, the Prince Albert Raiders defenseman, at the way that he's able to move around the ice, and maybe just because of that intoxicating skating stride that he has, but that's someone that really jumped out for me as well.
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice to see, you know, Prince Albert on the map with the departures of Morrissey and Draisaitl, that, you know, they've got another wave coming, Reed Gardner, of course, Gooley, you know, Nick McBride, the goaltender. But, yeah, you know what's funny, Jeff? When you look at this game, oftentimes the guys who are replacement guys come in and play their game. And I always say that at the in the broadcast, the guys who can best assimilate their game from what they do with their club team to this game are the guys that have the most success and the guys who can increase their draft stock the most as much as you can for a one game showdown. And I think Gouley did that. I mean, he had a burst in the first period. I thought he was shot out of a cannon. He was up the ice. I had to double check my roster to make sure to see who it was and to make sure it was him. But those guys have success because they get called in at the last minute. They don't feel the pressure and the hype of someone who was named a month ago and has had to build up for a month long to get to the game. Those guys come in and say, hey, I'm not supposed to be here anyways. I'm just going to go out and do my thing. And yeah, Gouley was really good.
Yeah, it's like you're playing with house money at that point, eh, Sammy? It's like, hey, you know what? This really wasn't supposed to be my game. I found myself here, so I'm just going to go for it. You know, the night before I went out with a couple of scouts and the Niagara Ice Dogs coaching staff, Marty Williamson and their crew, and they were gushing about how the city had really embraced the prospects game. You know, it's a brand new building. Marty's in there coaching the Ice Dogs, of course. And the building was packed, and it was sold out for a long time. Now, you've been to plenty of these games before, Sam. What did you make of how Niagara St. Catharines handled this year's edition of the BMO CHL NHL game?
Yeah, the building's killer, and I'm glad everyone got to see it, you know, live and firsthand. You know, you guys that don't get to get out of the studio a whole lot, it's an unbelievable spot. I mean, it's
great.
A great place to watch a game. The scouts love going there because there's a couple of really good perches for them. And I'm glad that everyone got to experience the stuff that we experience going up there to call a game. So, this, no question, the city was abuzz. You know, the way they've designed the rink to get people to spill out into the downtown area and to have people enter the rink from the downtown area is cool. You know, the thing that sucks when you're working there is parking is going to be an issue for those of us who aren't in that, you know, inner circle. I know you guys with your limo drivers and getting dropped off at the front door. It's a bit of a different program.
I was across the street at the Greenpeace, Sam. I was across the street. I made the walk over the bridge. Don't worry.
All right. I guess I'm talking about Damien or
John
Todd
Shannon.
Or whatever.
You're talking about John Shannon.
Well, definitely talking about John Shannon. No question about that. But they did a wonderful job hosting the event. It looks I thought BMO in its sponsorship, you know, especially the day before with the events that they threw and got their company involved, and it was good. It was an excellent event. Rarely is it a bad event, but I really like the way that that St. Catharines and the Niagara region really got into it.
A couple other things, news and notes around the NHL. Sarnia with new ownership, Darian Hatcher, David Leguan, the Cicerelli family sells the Sarnia Sting, and the Hatcher Group says they are going to be hands-on with the Sarnia Sting organization, which, you know, when you look at, you know, as early as next year with Chikrin and Kerestelev and Zaka, it seems going to be good starting next year with this Hatcher Group.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Cicerellis have long been people here that have, you know, and you have to give them credit because they were there through the building of the new arena and getting that up and running. And there's been a lot of consternation over the last, you know, 5 years that I can remember about continued ownership by the Cicerelli family. And so now they have an opportunity to kind of step away. You know, they thought they had something done earlier in the year. In fact, before the year started, that deal fell through. And it's cool to see ex-NHL guys come back. And, you know, obviously they'll want to make some improvements here and there. I think Nick Sinclair, the GM there, has done a really good job. Obviously, his position is going to be up for debate at the end of the year. A lot of times guys want to come in and be their own GMs. The other part of it is Trevor Letowski. I mean, with that group this year and the injuries that they've had to overcome, he has done an awesome job with that hockey club. And I hope that he's a guy that gets strong consideration to continue moving forward with the group because I think he's got a real good handle on it. When you say hands-on, Jeff, what are you expecting out of this thing? Because, you know, the guys want to come in and change the world right away. It's not always easy to do that. I guess some of it depends on how quick it gets done. You see him coming in and start firing right away?
Well, that's it. I mean, when I hear hands-on, I think to myself, to your point, I think Trevor Letowski's done a great job. I think Andy Delmore's done a really good job with Sarnia as well. When I hear hands-on, I say to myself, you'd hate to see Nick Sinclair be a general manager one and done. And then they bring in their own crew as opposed to, you know, stand back, have a look at the team. But you can understand, I mean, this is your money. You paid for it. This is your baby.
Yeah.
You should be afforded the right to come in and run it the way you see fit and bring in your own people. I just hope that, you know, the people that we just mentioned, whether it's Sinclair, Letowski, or Delmore, all get to have proper audience in front of the new group that owns the Sarnia's thing. But I mean, it'll be a competitive team next year. I actually thought they'd be a more competitive team this season, but really next year, I think Sarnia is really set up for some nice success.
Yeah, I think they've been too banged up. I think once they get healthy, get everyone back, then you might start to see the real Sarnia team, and they're kind of sitting there in that spot now where home ice might be a possibility. If that's the case, you know, that should be helpful for the first round. But, you know, you have to kind of wait these things out and see if they – this to me looks like a sneaky team in the West just because they may very well be a team that's hitting on all cylinders when the middle of March rolls around.
Certainly true. All right, on that, we'll take our first break of the podcast. Let you know Scott Niedermeyer is still to come, former Kamloops Blazer. That's right. He's an NHL Hall of Famer as well. But joining us next, he's the general manager and Mr. Everything off the ice, anyhow, for the Erie Otters, Sherwood Bassett, in moments on Junior.
I'm Wayne Simmons. I play for the Philadelphia Flyers, and I played for Owen Sound and Sault Ste. Marie of the OHL.
Sam, it's always a good day when you get that chance to talk to Sherwood Bassett. He is the general manager and really the everything in a lot of ways for the Erie Otters outside of what actually happens on the ice. Sherry, how are you today, sir?
Oh, it's always fun to visit with you guys. How are you guys doing?
We're doing good.
We're doing great, thanks.
We'll start from the obvious place with the Erie Otters, and that's Connor McDavid, from an individual point of view. Now, Sherry, you've coached some, you've watched many, you've seen them come, you've seen them go in junior hockey. Amongst the players that you've seen with your very own eyes, where do you rank Connor McDavid in that field of greats?
At this point, as a player, at this point in time, he's the best I've... And that's not to demean all these other people, because I think the world of all these other great players, but he's as good as anyone. He's as good as... I don't want to get caught saying, you know what I mean, because I have too much respect for some of these great players, but he's in that category. I mean, he's... You know, it's albeit a game, and there'll be some NHL guys, and he'll do something, and they'll say, "Did you see that?" And I said, "Yeah, 100 times." and the real thing is this, guys. He's such a good, he's a phenomenal leader. He's such a phenomenal person. I mean, it's so rare. I mean, that's one of the reasons he's so great. I mean, that wins the Academic Player of the Year award. He's inwardly driven, quietly driven. I mean, you got to see him sometimes when we all think that he's had a great game. And inside, you'd never know, but I know his personality now. He wasn't satisfied. He thought he could have been better. He doesn't make a big deal about it. There's no yelling and screaming. It's just like, you know, I could have done better. I remember, it's a story I haven't told, which is there's very few of those. When he was 16 years old, we were playing, and he just joined us as a rookie. He may not have been 16 yet. And we lost the game 5-3, and he had some good opportunities. Just didn't. We were walking out of the rink after, and he personally, privately, quietly apologized to me. He said, I let us down. He said, we didn't win this game because of me. Nobody around, not making a big deal of it. Just quiet. And I told him, like, you just hit your head somewhere or something? Like, you know, what truck did you fall off and bang your head here? But that's the responsibility he takes. He's so inwardly driven. It's no different. He's got such a passion. He's got such a commitment. It's no different than that noted surgeon. When he's going in there, he wants the scalpel. It doesn't matter, you know, and when people were saying that the World Junior, a lot of pressure, he didn't look at it. It was pressure. It was opportunity. I mean, great athletes, great. And you guys, when you're doing a big-time broadcast, you're not thinking that millions of people are watching or listening, you know, trying to do the best you can. I'm going to sincerely miss him, obviously, his talent, I mean, and our team, but I'm going to really miss him as a person.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that strikes me, you know, and the opportunities that we've had to meet him. And, you know, just going back to that, and I think in the last couple of dealings, there's been so much on him, you know, the World Juniors and the BMO mm-hmm. Top Prospects game, and every place he visits, he's the center of attention. Do you think it's a good thing that he ended up with you in Erie, just to alleviate at least some of that, because you guys are not in Canada? Do you think that's an element that's helped him out a bit?
Sam, it's a good. A number of people have suggested that to me. First of all, I think it's a good thing he ended up in Erie. For my personal delight here and so forth, and what he's done. Like, he's made this hockey team in this community. I mean, the profile he's given us now, because it's football country and basketball country. He, on his back, has made it hockey country. And, I think the fact, but every rink apparently that we're going into now is sold out with him. And here's a good something for your listeners and stuff. The other night in Guelph, the place was jammed. And afterwards, the hallway was packed. And I said, Mac, after the game, you know, what do you think here? Do you want us to bring you around here? And he said, my parents aren't here. And, you know, I have no problem with this, he said. And he walked out. And everybody was on him. What bothers me at times, and we have to step in, is that some people bring 11 things to beside. You know what I mean? They don't show the respect for the other people that are waiting. So we've stopped all that. But he would do it. I mean, he's, you know, the best story I've told is when he was 16 years old and we had a poster signing. And the lineup after the game, the lineup was from Erie to Buffalo, I think. And so they had police and everybody there, and they could only get the poster signed. And this father came with his 5-year-old daughter or something, and she was, And so they came, and the daughter had something in her hand, and she wanted, and on the security or police came over, and he put his hand out very nicely and said, hey, put the young girl, now remember, he's only 16 years old, put the young girl on his lap, signed whatever she had, talked to her, and asked the father if he wanted to take a picture. Now, you talk about sensitivity as a young kid and understanding. I mean, I'm listening to some of the stuff that's going on at the Super Bowl, and those guys, all up, if it wasn't for you guys, they wouldn't get as noted, and yet they're disrespectful about even being interviewed, so... That's the difference between this guy. He's
sure. You and I have talked about him even before you brought him in under the exceptional banner. He's always been a million-dollar kid on and off the ice. Curious about a couple of other kids that you have, and curious about one who, I mean, this guy's a shoe-in for the OHL Rookie of the Year going away. How did the DeBrincat deal come together?
Wow, that's a great story. We were up to look at a prospect in northern Michigan. And I had my shoes with no socks. It was 408 ball, I think. At least felt that way. It was snowing and everything else. I'm giving my people, what are we doing here? I know about this guy, but I try to see all our prospects. Freezing to death in the rink and stuff like that. And they were playing this private prep school out of Chicago. It was the Sioux Indian under-18 team. I asked if I knew the athletic director there. He played at Lake State and said, hey, I got to keep going on a full ride to University of Massachusetts. So I really am. Yeah, and he's 5'7" or stuff like that. I'm watching the game. They win like 8-something. It's unbelievable. 3 goals and 2 assists. And on the puck like a dog on a meat wagon. I mean, he is all over everybody. He's just, you got to see it. And back checking, and people are open, don't know that they're getting the puck from them. And I said, oh. So they played again the next morning at 10 o'clock in the morning. There's more people in your studio right now than at the game. And 3 20-minute periods, and they don't win. He's phenomenal. And the guy said, well, where do you want to go and eat? Because it was early in the morning. I said, I'm going down to this guy's dressing room. We're going to eat right beside him. And I asked for permission to meet with him, and I said, here, you got a full ride to UMass. He said, yes, sir. So how do you feel about playing in the Ontario Hockey League with the Erie Otters? He said, I'd think about it. Well, I'm still the old-fashioned guy. I'm just a step ahead of smoke signals. I get the pen and paper out. And I call him. His parents wanted to meet with me. And he came from Chicago. He's from Michigan. And they drove, and we met with him. And now we had to keep the secret because he's a free agent. Anybody yep. going to get him, we couldn't sign him. So, and just tell you a story, couldn't sign him for a while, and the athletic director said, Sherry, when he's recruiting, I said, I really feel bad about that because I don't want that to never try to be disrespectful in any manner, but he was a free agent. He said, well, let me tell you what kind of kid he is. He didn't tell us till today. And I asked him to keep it a secret, and he's a special talent, too. I mean, he can, that's why McDavid enjoys playing with him when he does. He's not playing with him right now, but I mean, it's good to be lucky the odd time, guys.
Well, you got a good one. You got a great one there, Sherry.
And I'll tell you what, he's a special kid, too. Matter of fact, we did these leadership evaluation things that we had some people, and he went off the chart, but McDavid, like, he rang the bell on his leadership stuff. So,
you know what, Sherry? And I don't mean to interrupt you there. Sorry, we're on a little bit of a delay there, and so it can be troublesome for me at times. But anyways, the question I wanted to ask you was, you've got DeBrinket, you've got Dylan Strome, and we definitely want to talk about him. You've got Connor McDavid. I mean, you've put together quite the group here. We've heard a lot about Connor. We're hearing about Alex DeBrinket and his wonderful story. But the guy that always seems to me to fly under the radar is Dylan Strome. Yet when I look at him as his own entity, this guy to me has got to be a top five, a top seven pick. I mean, who is it to choose from with all these guys? You talk about good kids and excellent players. I think Strome fits right in the mix with these other two guys.
He's right. Here's what's special about Strome. Any other team, they'd be talking about him if McDavid wasn't there. And you know what's special about this young man? Is it all the talk and everything, of course, about McDavid, and he's on the same team, and he's going to be a top star, without question. I mean, he's fine with it. There's no sense of jealousy. As a matter of fact, the two of them are best of buddies. They hang out together. I mean, that's what tells you about this guy. No ego. I mean, this guy is going to be a special player. I mean, this guy is going to be a top National Hockey League player. I mean, you talk about intelligence. You talk about sharing the puck. You talk about going to the dirty areas to get it. You talk about understanding the game. This guy, like, let me tell you, it's unique. I mean, this guy's, I remember some guy saying, oh, he doesn't, what about his skating? He told me that about O'Reilly. Let me tell you about this guy's skating. When his legs get stronger and stuff like that, his skating is fine. His skating is going to get nothing but better. There's nothing wrong with his skating. Is he as quick as McDavid? No. Rabbits aren't as quick as McDavid. Okay? So, I mean, but the point is this, is that, hey, this guy's a top player, as you mentioned, Sam, I enjoy watching you guys covering sports, and you do your homework. Like, you're right on about this guy. Make no mistake about it.
Well, tell us about a couple of more, and our time is getting heavy with you, Sherry, and we always thank you for it. Sherry, tell us about a couple of players you picked up this year. Earlier on the season, Nicholas Baptiste from the Sudbury Wolves, and then in and around trade deadline, you pick up two from the Belleville Bulls, Jake Marchment and Remy Elie. Your thoughts on those three players?
Well, it's good points here that, you know, I always try to emphasize about getting the right kind. It's people that win championships and getting the right people. We always knew, I remember in the draft for our own league and stuff like that, Baptiste was a high character guy. And he had leadership skills too. And so when we brought him in and when we made the deal for him, we were really excited about it. And he can shoot the puck. He gets to certain areas and that he's a phenomenal addition. He's not afraid to go to tough areas. Everything you want to say about what he, you know, what kind of, he brings phenomenal leadership. He's strong. He's very coachable. All those kind of things, which when we made this deal and I talked to Smitty about it, everything he said about him, he was right. And then the other two, Remy Elie's better player than I even thought he was. I really liked him as a player. This is a guy that's really grown and gotten better every year. And he's 204 pounds and he can skate. He's playing with McDavid now. He really thinks the game. And what can I say about him? I mean, he's a significant player, and he's gonna play in the big leagues too. And then Marchman, you know, wins faceoffs, strong, good team guy. You know, we knew that he made a mistake and he got punished for it. And you know, hey, I mean, I'm the only perfect guy I know, guys. my wife doesn't necessarily agree with that, and a lot of people I know don't. But the kid made a mistake. I talked to him about it. You know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. We discussed it at length. I really liked what he had to say. He was fully embarrassed about it. He's been an example of how social media can kill you, and I was convinced with him that he really was sorry about what he did, and he's not that kind of a person, and he's really that third line of ours now. He's a good, strong checker, and especially now with Pettit, and those guys are all big guys in that line, and he filled some needs that we needed, and he's come in here and been a phenomenal person here. So I have no personal evidence of whatever faults he had before, because he certainly hasn't demonstrated them with us.
Well, the last question I would have for you, Sherry, is you've talked about all these wonderful players. You've put together a great group, but you need to have a leader to lead the group. And I know you and I, at some of the games that we've done with the Erie Otters this year, you can't say enough about head coach Chris Knobloch. And it's an interesting story and in how his path has worked out, coming from Kootenay and going to the MasterCard Memorial Cup in 2011, and then kind of having things go sideways there in Kootenay with the University of Alberta and all that sort of stuff. And you end up giving him a call. I think there was some reluctance at some point for him to come over, and then he comes over, and I know you've been really impressed. What is it about Chris that enables him to do the job with the hockey club you have?
This guy, you talk about leadership, you talk about teaching, you talk about work ethic. First of all, he grew up 40 minutes from my hometown, a small town farm boy from Saskatchewan. I saw his team in the Memorial Cup, and I asked who was coaching this team. And when things were terminated with him, I immediately wanted to talk to him. I knew some about his background. This guy's going to coach in the National Hockey League. There's 15 teams in the National Hockey League. Somebody was telling me, I haven't really, that they either work with me or for me, different coaches and staff members there and stuff like that. And this guy, you know, this guy is a phenomenal coach and a phenomenal person. And he's a phenomenal teacher. I mean, make no mistake, a team takes on the character of its leadership. And he's our leader there. And the assistant coaches that work with him, and McKee is going to be a heck of a coach, and Vince Lacy, these guys just think the world. One guy's played 14 years in the NHL, so, and another guy came up through the college system, so they've been around it, and they have such respect. The secret is being respected. The reason I respect you guys. I respect you guys in the job you do. Never mind being liked. If you can be both, fine. This guy has earned so much respect from his players and anybody that knows him. It's, and his abilities and his knowledge. I mean, make no mistake, I'm a little cog in this. I've just surrounded myself with good people, and it's really worked out. I'm just a Anton from an anthill compared to all these other guys.
You're too humble, Sherry. You put together a big winner in Erie and a former Memorial Cup winner with the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds. Listen, thanks so much for doing this today. Much appreciated. Look forward to seeing your team twice this weekend on Sportsnet, Friday against the Frontenacs and Sunday against the 67s. Thanks so much for this, Sherry.
Guys, thanks, Sherry. It's always fun. Keep punching.
There he is, Sherwood Basson of the Erie Otters. You know, Sammy, Sherry's always one of those delightful guys that you speak to because he's got a million stories. And no matter what, even because I've talked to Sherry before and sometimes I've heard stories over and over again, but there's always a new twist, a new way he uses the language, a new saying, always something new and funny.
Yeah.
That it doesn't really matter that I'm hearing the same story over again. Sherry could tell you the exact same story every single day. And it would be consistently interesting. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's a legend. Oshawa, Sault Ste. Marie, World Juniors, Hockey Canada, OHL Board of Governors, OHL ownership, all that stuff. I mean, he's done it. He's done everything. But a fascinating guy to talk to. Always insightful. Very candid. I know when we're going in and do Friday Night Hockey, and we've seen a lot of the Erie Otters, he's really candid with his thoughts about his hockey club and forthcoming about, you know, with information about his hockey club to help make the broadcast better. It's always a pleasure to run into him. And, yeah, he's a wonderful storyteller, extraordinaire for sure.
And at the NHL level as well, if you ever get a chance, folks, and you get a chance to talk to Sherry Basson, ask him about being the point person on the Matt Sundin-Wendell Clark trade from the Quebec point of view. It is a story for the ages, including this little one. Where I remember talking to Sherry about it once, and he said, I remember I talked to Cliff Fletcher, and the deal started as a small deal. It turned into something bigger. We got around to the name Wendell Clark, and Cliff Fletcher said to Sherry, well, I'll tell you what, Sherry, put me in the deal, because if I trade Wendell Clark, I'm going to be run out of town. So if we're going to make this trade, put me in the deal to go to Quebec as well and become a Quebec Nordique. When we look at the Erie Otters, Sam, we're going to see them twice this week on Sportsnet. Friday Night Hockey against the Kingston Frontenacs, Sunday against the Ottawa 67s. I do wonder, did they do enough come trade deadline to address, not so much up front, because, you know, they picked up Baptiste early, as we mentioned, Remy Ellie from the Belleville Bulls. I wonder if they maybe spent too much on those players and didn't have enough to bring in a defenseman like a Ben Harper from Guelph, or someone like in that ilk? Or did you think Erie did enough come trade deadline?
I think the other questions would be the goaltending. I mean, here's the thing. Devin Williams pretty much unseated Oscar Dansk last year. Dansk was a second-round pick of the Columbus Blue Jackets. By the end of the playoffs, he wasn't even the starter for Erie. Devin Williams comes in this year. The net is fairly pretty much handed to him. Daniel DeConin comes in, plays well in some of the starts that he has. But ultimately, they're leaning on Williams to lead the way. I think when you look at the numbers for Williams this year, they haven't quite been up to snuff. Now, the one thing they did do to address that is go out and get Marty Biron to come in and try and help Williams and get him right for the start of the playoffs. If Williams can play this year in the playoffs like he did last year when he took Oscar Dansk's job, I don't think the Otters are going to have anything to worry about. You talk about that top-notch defenseman, and while that's an element they could have also addressed, I think the general feeling is that with the group we have, the forward group to complement it, let's just look at our defensemen as guys who are simply puck movers to get it into the forwards' hands. And you know, you have Dermott, who can obviously produce from the back end in that regard, and power play and whatnot, and even 5-on-5 situations. But I don't know, Jeff. Do you think it's enough? I think if you can get Williams to play the way he did last year, it'll be enough. Do you think that they should have gone out and got a defenseman?
On any other year, I probably would have said this would have been enough. I just look at the moves the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds made, and now they've won 8 games in a row, and they're ripping through teams, and they're putting up, I mean, they're putting up 12 spots on the board. When do you see a 12 spot on the board in junior hockey anymore, Sam? But there it is for this. I just do wonder with that high-octane offense now that complements the players like Sergei Tolchinsky, you wonder if, man, you couldn't have just saved something to try to fish Ben Harper. I know I keep coming back to Ben Harper. It might be the obvious one. Going to the Barry Colts.
And he's probably the guy.
And he just would have been that right fit in Erie, in my estimation.
You know, the one thing, every time you talk about Erie, you talk about Connor McDavid. He's not coming back next year. So at that point, would you have gone all in? And I mean, you know, mortgage your future for the next 3 years. That's something that people talk about, too, and not only adding the two forwards in Ellie and Marchman, but maybe getting someone on the back as well. I mean, Baptiste, you can't forget about him. He was added well before the trade deadline, but maybe that situation has arisen. But then again, you don't know where the business stands. I mean, there's been a lot about the Erie Otters and the business side of things and the lawsuits and that sort of stuff. So, you know, was there that much of an impetus to go out and mortgage the future when – Mm-hmm. Likely, this is a club that's going to have to get sold in the next couple of years. And if you're a prospective owner, you want to know that coming into this thing that, you know, past Connor McDavid, there's still life for this hockey club. So that part is something that, was probably considered too. And you know what, Jeff? Just as an aside to all that, if you haven't had the opportunity for our listeners, David Schultz wrote a piece in the Globe that I thought was really fascinating. Did you see it, Jeff?
I did, yeah. I read the Oilers piece.
Yeah.
The Edmonton piece, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a fascinating read. And, you know, if the Erie Otters and Sherry Bassin and those things interest you in the ownership and that, I would strongly suggest going to read Schultz's piece because it's quite enlightening.
Yeah, because so far the coverage of it has been pretty simplistic, but Dave Schultz, the Globe, really took an in-depth, long view of the situation between the Edmonton Oilers ownership group, the Erie Otters, and Sherry Bassin. We look forward to seeing the Kings and Frontenacs face off against the Erie Otters Friday. Ottawa 67s on Sunday. We'll start with the Frontenacs facing off against Erie on Friday. Going into this one, from the hype point of view, it's going to be the two top picks. It'll be Connor McDavid versus Lawson Crouse. But what do you like about the Frontenacs this year, Sam? It's a year that they're expected to do a lot more. The Bennett injury cost them not getting him back. The defense has been an issue all season long. It's been a tough go for Paul McFarland in his first year as a head coach in the OHL. But what do you make of the Fronts?
Yeah, it's an interesting group for me. I mean, they've locked down things a little bit on the back end in terms of the goals against, but surprisingly, this is a team that hasn't been able to score.
Yeah.
At the start of the year, when you looked at it, even without Bennett, you still thought you had the likes of Kujawinski, Watson. You'd get some scoring from McEwen in the back end. You'd have Lawson Crouse there to help put the puck in the net. And you thought that there might be enough there to kind of withstand the injury to Bennett. Then Kujawinski gets moved. Bennett's injury has lasted longer than I think everyone expected with his return to the lineup. And so it's a team now that Lucas Parisini has stepped up. They've done a good job with the goals against and the defensive side of things. But now it's a team that, go figure, can't score goals. So that's the issue that Kingston's going to face down the stretch. I mean, do I look at Kingston as a legit contender in the East? I would say no until Sam Bennett gets back in the lineup, and depending on when that happens, you know, he may not have enough time to get his legs under him. But do you see him as a threat, Jeff? I just don't know if I see him as a threat in the East right now as we stand here today.
Don't see him as a threat mainly because of the back end. I know the goal scoring has kind of vanished.
Yep.
I remember talking to Paul McFarland in the summer, and, you know, rookie head coach coming in from the Oshawa Generals, and he said, you know what, it's going to be a steep learning curve for all of us. My main goal, not so much to worry about the day in, day out of the regular season. I need to have these guys ready for playoffs. Like, Paul in the offseason was already thinking to himself, I need to build to the playoffs. But, man,
yeah.
getting there has been awkward for the Kings and Frontenacs. I know it's always been the long-term plan for the season for Paul McFarland, but I just don't know that he has the horses on that back end. In a conference where, I mean, Oshawa's top team in the CHL, North Bay is always a tough out, and don't look now, but the Barrie Colts have loaded up as well. It's we always say, oh, it's tough to get out of the West. It is tough to get out of the West. It's almost as tough to get out of the East now in the OHL. And I just don't see I don't see Kingston as being there.
Isn't that funny that you hire a coach and his first thinking is about the playoffs? But when you go back to last year, up 3-0 against Peterborough, they end up losing that series. And I don't think, Jeff, I could be wrong, I think it's been 19 years since they've won a first round playoff matchup.
Yeah.
So that's you know, that's the kind of pressure you have the second you take the job as a rookie coach. That's a real challenge. Now, they're hanging around right now, you know, 7th or 8th place in the conference. You know, important games here down the stretch. Couple of games at hand on Mississauga, which should be helpful, and even Belleville, who's ahead of them right now. But those games don't mean anything unless you win them, of course. And so Kingston's road to start winning those games is going to start with a tough match on Friday against the Erie Otters.
I can't wait to get at it. All right, so that game Friday on Sportsnet, it is the Erie Otters in Kingston at the K-Rock Center to face off against the Frontenacs. We're back in a moment. Talk to former Kamloops Blazer defenseman. You may know him as Hall of Fame D-man Scott Niedermeyer. Stick around.
I'm Scott Hartnell from the Columbus Blue Jackets, a former Prince Albert Raider of the WHL.
Well, Sam, our next guest really needs no introduction. He's kind of done it all in hockey at the pro level and at the junior level as well. Former third overall draft pick, Hockey Hall of Famer, Stanley Cup champion, Memorial Cup champion, Played with the Kamloops Blazers from 1989 to 1992. Scott Niedermeyer, how are you today, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We're doing great. And great. You know, this is one of our favorite segments, talking about, you know, CHL alumni. And boy, your Blazers team certainly was a powerhouse in the late 80s, early 90s. When you hear the name, the Kamloops Blazers, and you think to your era, what's the first thing that comes to your mind, Scott?
Well, I guess I sort of think back to making the decision to go play there. And, you know, they had, you know, a fair bit of success with Ken Hitchcock as the coach there. And that was really a big reason why, I guess, my parents and I decided that that was a place I wanted to play, was that they had a great organization, had success on the ice, and, you know, wanted to try and be a part of that, I guess, and ended up going there, playing in two Memorial Cups and winning the second one my third year there. So I learned a lot. It ended up being a great decision, and obviously made a lot of great friends in Kamloops.
When you go back and you look at things now, and being in the coaching ranks and that sort of thing, how much do you think that the WHL and its schedule assimilated or helped you transition, you know, a year after junior to play in the National Hockey League? And do you see that with players now that you coach?
For sure. I mean, you know, it was a big step, stepping out back then of Bantam Hockey into the WHL, you know, playing such an intense schedule at such a high level was a huge adjustment. Probably the biggest one I ever had to make in my career. You know, but like I said, playing with the great teammates I had in Kamloops, for the great coaches and a well-run organization, there was a lot to learn, and I benefited being able to do that from some great people.
You know, you mentioned those coaches, and if you could say a couple of words or sort of describe the differences between the coach, the head coach anyway, you started with in Ken Hitchcock, and the one you finished with in Tom Rennie. What are the similarities or differences between those two?
Yeah, I mean, Hitch was very demanding. You know, they both knew the game very well. You know, I was a 16-year-old rookie, young kid showing up, and really, you know, didn't have a lot of experience to sort of make comparisons about coaches. So Hitch was there. He's very demanding. You know, he was very vocal behind the bench. Tom was definitely not that, but knew the game very well. And, you know, also had Don Hay as an assistant the whole time I was there, and had Dempsey, two other, you know, great guys to learn a lot from. So it's an important time in the player's development, for sure, where you're at an age and you're learning a lot about the game. And I couldn't have asked for a better situation.
Speak about development, and the hallmark to your game was your great skating ability. And you see so many players now, and I use John Tavares as an example, goes into the league and people are knocking his skating a little bit, and now has become one of the best skaters in the league. For you, how much of that was natural, God-given talent, and how much of that was your work either with yourself away from what your team did, and maybe with other professionals that were helping you out?
Both, for sure. Definitely, you know, that was my talent as a hockey player. But also put time in. You know, at a young age, my parents had, you know, my brother and I in power skating and different things like that, where we would get taught proper techniques and things like that. But I definitely see these days there's a lot more emphasis on a lot of individual skills, the training side of it. You know, 30 years ago, there wasn't nearly as much as there is now. So I think that speaks to what you mentioned about Tavares. You know, these guys have the opportunity, even as they've reached the NHL, to continue to work on those things with different coaches and trainers. And it's great to see. I mean, it makes the game that much better.
Scott, before he joined the Windsor Spitfires, I kept hearing about Cam Fowler, this defenseman that skates like Scott Niedermeyer. And I was like, no one skates like Scott Niedermeyer. And I said that about Paul Coffey before you, until I saw the young man play with the Windsor Spitfires. And I said to myself, stylistically, he does look like Scott Niedermeyer out there. Now you've had an opportunity to be behind the bench with him. Your thoughts on Cam Fowler? And did you ever get a chance to watch him when he played in Windsor, by the way?
I never did see him, you know, play junior hockey. You know, I was still playing at the time. I remember going, I just sort of retired and went to the draft with the Ducks, and he was Ducks pick came up, and he was still available. And you know, our scouts were pretty excited and talking about what type of player he was. And it's been a lot of fun. I've enjoyed, you know, trying to help him progress into a professional, and he's done a great job. He definitely can skate extremely well, and I think a lot of times there's a lot to learn about how to use that properly all over the ice, whether it's offensively, defensively, things like that. I know it took me a long time to sort of figure out how to be most effective with that talent, and we'll continue to work on it, but he's done a great job.
I want to continue on with the NHL line of questioning now and all the great coaches that you've played for, the lengthy career you've had. When you look at Bruce Boudreau, what does he bring to the table differently that's allowed Anaheim to really maintain its place at the top of the NHL?
I think the first thing I think of is he's a real player's coach. The guys, you know, love him. They want to play for him. And, you know, they feel like they're in it together with him. So I think that's how he gets the most out of the guys. You know, lately we've had a good little run where we're playing smart hockey. That's so important in the game today, especially when you get to the playoffs, that you're not giving the other team opportunities. You know, these teams are talented enough, they're going to create their own. So it's a matter of giving them nothing, making them earn every inch, every shot. And so, you know, in the last little bit, we've been able to do that. So hopefully we can continue to get better at it. So when the playoffs roll around, we can try and have the success we want.
You know, someone whose career at the pro level you've watched from pretty much day one when he was a teammate, former Calgary Hitmen standout Ryan Getzlaf, was there when you guys won the Stanley Cup, obviously, in 2007. How's his game developed since you first saw him as a rookie in the NHL?
You know, Ryan, you know, as a rookie in 07 when we have won the Stanley Cup, he was a huge part of that. Just adding the depth and, you know, the scoring threat that he brought to our team back then was huge. And it's been fun watching him mature and obviously become the captain of the Ducks team now. And I think we're confident that he can lead this team into the playoffs and you know, be a great example in what you need to do to have success in the playoffs and make those little sacrifices that it takes for maybe your stats and things like that. And, you know, that's really the last step, I think, for him to take as a player. And we're confident he can do that for us.
You know, all these wonderful players on Anaheim that we've talked about, you know, Fowler, and you look at Perry and Getzlaf are obviously the two marquee names there. Bruce Boudreau doing a great job. But when you look at this thing as an entirety and you go from your playing days to your coaching days, how's the drive different? And does it make you, when you're behind the bench, yearn to want to play anymore?
Initially, I think in the first couple of years, it was a strange sort of feeling when you're watching it and you're like, geez, I want to be out there. I want to be trying to help. But, you know, now I realize my spot and, you know, I'm behind these guys 100%. It's not a whole lot different in that sense. I think as a veteran player and you step out there, you sort of have that same mentality where you're trying to help, you know, the team have success. It's maybe a little less about you as you mature as a player. And I think now as a coach, you sort of just take that one more step and really cheer for these guys, try and support them and teach them what they need to do to have success and try and win a championship. So I enjoy it. It's a lot of fun. We have some good young players that I enjoy working with here.
I want to finish up by talking quickly, if we could, about the your Memorial Cup year. And you beat the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds. Under 15 seconds left, Zach Boyer scores the game-winning goal. You had lost to Sault Ste. Marie earlier in the round, robin 6-3. Going into that game against the Hounds, what was the feeling, what was the thought, and where were you when Boyer scored that goal?
Yeah, it was an interesting year for me. I was drafted the year before. I managed to stick around in New Jersey for a couple months and then come back to Kamloops in the end of November. Played in the World Junior where we didn't have much success that year. And really, for me, it was a tough transition, sort of trying to find a way to contribute and have success and, you know, keep focus on the junior game when I came back. And it didn't go real well during the regular season, but when the playoffs rolled around, we had a good group of guys. We knew we could compete. So we were excited about that, and good things happened. When we got to Seattle, the Sioux had a great team as well, a very deep team. You know, we get into the final and kind of realize, you know, here's our opportunity. Anything can happen. So it was obviously a hard-fought game. And I, with Zach's goal, 15 seconds left, I was actually caught up ice a little bit. I managed to back-check, grab a turnover, and get it up to Zach, and he did the rest. So pretty exciting way to finish a big game like that, for sure.
Well, listen, you had a really exciting career. One final thing before we wrap up. Draft day stories are always interesting. 1991, you go third overall to the New Jersey Devils. The draft that year was in Buffalo at the Old Odd. What are your memories from that day? And did you have a feeling you were going third? Did you think maybe San Jose was going to grab you earlier? What was your draft day story, Scott?
Yeah, I think, you know, a few things. You know, it was obviously the Eric Lindros draft. That was the big story that everybody was talking about on a big level. You know, so the rest of us were just kind of there, you know, going about our business. I did kind of have a feeling that I was going to be drafted to New Jersey. I mean, I didn't know for sure, but I just had a little bit of a feeling that that was a strong possibility. So when that happened, pretty exciting day for sure. You know, just your eyes are wide open. You see all these people that, you know, part of the NHL, and they're, you know, on the draft floor, and you're meeting them and different things like that. So pretty exciting moment as a young guy to get drafted into the NHL, sort of realize that a dream's one step closer.
An exciting moment for you, and you gave a lot of fans a lot of exciting moments over the course of your career. Scott, thanks so much for taking time today. We appreciate it.
Good talking
thanks,
to you guys.
Scott.
Thank you.
You know, interesting that talk about Cam Fowler with Scott Niedermeyer. I think you and I were having a conversation about how this Fowler kid can skate, and you'd heard it before. This kid skates like Scott Niedermeyer. Now, I'm not saying he's going to be the Hall of Fame defenseman that Scott Niedermeyer turned into, but from pretty much the get-go, Sam, and I think you saw Cam before I saw him, the minute I saw Fowler skate, I said to myself, that's the guy in Anaheim. That's Scott Niedermeyer's skating stride. That's his style.
And a similar type player because, you know, he's a bit on the smaller side, could really move. And what was fascinating about Fowler to me was that he was able to make that jump after 2010 and go right into the National Hockey League. And I thought, wow, if there's one element that allows you to make the jump, it's the skating ability. And you heard Scott say, hey, listen, I started in New Jersey that year that we won the Cup. And by November, I was returned almost like Leon Draisaitl with Kelowna now. So to think that skating ability, of course, with Scott, that's his hallmark. With Fowler, that's his hallmark. And even for Niedermeyer at that time, it wasn't quite enough to get him over that hump where he could sustain the rest of the year there. So it just goes to show you that when you sit there and you watch as an armchair fan, just how good these guys really are. And so pretty cool to have Scott on, not just because of his, you know, his history and his winning history, but, you know, I think people don't necessarily realize this. He's a part owner of the Kootenai Ice as well.
Yeah, he certainly is. It's a, you know, it's funny the way so many guys now, and we'll, you know, we talk about the Sarnia Sting organization, and here comes, you know, Darian Hatcher as part of that ownership group. It really is, David Legwand as well. It really is interesting the way players, when their career is wrapped up, there's still that pull to be involved in junior hockey at some capacity, that you still want to be in, that there still is that lure. I mean, you look at the Kamloops Blazers organization, or, you know, you look at other organizations that are owned by NHLers. You know, we think of the Quebec Ramparts before he sold it with Patrick Waugh. It is interesting the way guys want to come back to junior in whatever capacity.
Yeah, I think there's still the inner drive. There's the element of being involved in the game on the business side of things that those players didn't get a chance to experience. And when you look at the grand scheme of things, Jeff, how else really would you get involved in high-level ownership without risking everything that you've earned? And with all due respect to where franchises are and so on and so forth, for a guy like Niedermeyer who played as long as he did, you know, it's not, you know, that if the Kootenai Ice were to fail miserably, and they have at the box office, not on the ice, that's for sure, that it would ruin him financially. And so I think that element also drives players when you look at the Windsor Spitfires, the London Knights, Kelly McCrimmon, the Brandon Wheat Kings, you know, and the list goes on and on. You talked about the Quebec Remparts being the same way. So it's kind of it's a cool thing how these guys want to come back and do things right. I guess the best example that I can think of in recent history is the Prince George Cougars and what they're going through right now and kind of revitalizing their program. You know, Jansen Harkins, you and I saw him at the BMO Top Prospects game. So that element still exists in the drive to win, the drive to be part of a team, and the ability to get involved at a level that you weren't able to get involved in as a player because the finances didn't allow you to.
Kootenai's an interesting spot right now, and the whispers have started again.
Boy.
What do you think the future of the organization is there? Stay, go? What do you think? What's your gut telling you?
They're
what do you have on your radar?
They're going to go. Yeah, they're going to go, Jeff. It's just a matter of when and which market they're going to go to. I mean, the problem is this. You look at Kootenai. Can you think of a franchise that's had the kind of success and the playoff run that the Kootenai Ice have had? I mean, right off the top of your head.
I know, and it even hasn't responded. No marketplace response.
It hasn't responded. You know, and it's a small marketplace. I get it. I want to say the third smallest market. You look at Owen Sound, Swift Current, and I think Cranbrook is in there as the third smallest market in all the Canadian Hockey League. And if you can't go out and support a winning team, despite how few people you may have in your community, it's just not going to work. The business model just doesn't work. And so I think the ownership there has taken a beating. We didn't really get into that with Scott because with him being behind the bench in Anaheim, I don't know how much he's had the opportunity to pay attention to what's gone on with the franchise. I'm sure he's aware, but you know, to ask him any questions of great length just wouldn't have been fair to Scott. But I don't know, Jeff. Where do you see any potential places? I mean, what are your thoughts?
You know, going back to when we were doing the prospects game in Kelowna, I kept hearing the name Winnipeg. I kept hearing Winnipeg, but then maybe you look somewhere else in British Columbia. That may have an opportunity, but and the whispers have kind of died down. I haven't heard it for a while, but for so long I heard that the Western Hockey League wants to get a team into Winnipeg sooner than later.
Yeah, when you look at the success Calgary's had, you know, the success Edmonton's had with NHL ownership also owning the junior team, the synergies there, you know, yep. You think of the Edmonton Oil Kings last year, four guys drafted by the Oilers playing right underneath your nose at that high level. Yep. So the synergies make sense there. Winnipeg will be in the Western Hockey League once again, and it'll just be a matter of who. And obviously the hot rumor is going to be Kootenay. You know, Lethbridge has to get some ownership things figured out. I don't think they'll ever leave there, but that's an issue that has to get sorted out. So it's just a matter of time for me as to when Kootenay moves, and I can't see it being much past, oh boy, the end of next year and maybe even before that.
But Abbotsford, Sammy?
Abbotsford's a possibility. The infrastructure's in place there. Chilliwack is a market close to Abbotsford that hasn't quite worked out for the Western Hockey League. I'm quite certain that Abbotsford would be in the arena of, pardon the pun, of trying to get a tenant in there to play in that beautiful barn. I'm sure that would be an option. I think if the Western Hockey League had its druthers and there was only going to be one team that was going to move, at least with Kootenay, you can still do it because they're in the Eastern Conference. And so you have the opportunity that if you wanted to go to Winnipeg, you wouldn't really disrupt what's happening in the Eastern Conference. You'd find a way to work around it that they'd still be, you know, able to work the East Division and the Central Division and find a way to work through that. And so to me, that my guess would be that would be the best thing for the WHL. But there's still a lot to be decided there. The problem is, Jeff, when you keep hearing year in and year out that there's issues, when you look at the attendance and then you look at the success on the ice, it just doesn't match up. So
yeah.
I think it's inevitable, right?
How different a situation is it than with the Plymouth Whalers of the OHL? Consistently in the playoffs, Volucha had the great program every year, consistent, turning out high-end guys, and no market response, they're off the flint.
Yeah, that's a great point that you make, and that's a much bigger market to draw from than Cranbrook. And you talk about both franchises in a similar spot in terms of churning out top-notch guys, first-round picks, you know, playoff success. It's really, I don't know, it's kind of unparalleled between those two clubs and the rest of the CHL, if you will, because it just hasn't worked at the box office, and you know that element has to exist in order for a franchise to succeed.
You know, just as a follow-up here, we'll conclude the segment by talking a little bit more around Scott Niedermeyer and specifically the skill set. So we're at St. Catharines last week, Sam, and watching the kids in the practice and watching him in the warm-up. And I'm standing there next to Damian Cox, and he turns to me and he says, "Where did all the bad skaters go?" Like, you look at the hallmark of someone like Scott Niedermeyer, and the forte has always been the skating, obviously. But now, with so many players obviously having their own skating instructors growing up and edge work when you're really young, are we finally at the place where we're prepared to say, when we say a player is a bad skater, really we're splitting hairs? Because at this level now, there's no bad skaters. The bad skaters are gone.
Yeah, Yep, they're, for the most part, they're gone. You're right. I mean, there's still guys that are going to have knocks against their skating, and it's funny because, you know, you look at Dylan Strome, and that's where some of the knocks come out. And if I look at Dylan and compare him to Ryan at the same age, I think Dylan's a better skater right now than Ryan was at this age. 100%. And Ryan's turned into to a player where skating is not an issue anymore. So it's one of the skills that can really be worked on and improved. You know, I'd say shooting would be the other one, because you can stand there and hammer pucks all day, all night, and your shot is bound to get better. Skating's the same thing. If you're taught the proper technique and glide, and you got the skates that are all customized to what your stride is and all that sort of stuff, I think with good instruction, that too can improve to the point where it shouldn't be really a problem for anyone in the National Hockey League.
All right, so take a quick break. Back to wrap up another edition of your favorite CHL podcast, Junior, after this.
I'm Ryan Callahan of the Tampa Bay Lightning. I played for the Guelph Storm in the Ontario Hockey League.
Welcome back to the program, and thanks to everyone, by the way, who used the Twitter handle at SNetJunior. Going to get to your Twitter questions here in a couple of seconds. But, Sam, the top 10 rankings, BMO CHL top 10, week 18 have come out. Once again, the Oshawa Generals on top, followed by the Kelowna Rockets, who have been dismantling teams lately. Thank you very much. Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds, they move up a spot from 4 to 3. They are in at that top 3 position. The Brandon Wheat Kings drop a spot to 4, followed by the Erie Otters, who are up 1. Rimouski, Medicine Hat, Blainville, Boisbriand, Moncton, and Baie-Comeau round out your top 10. Honorable mention to the Everett Silvertips. They were in a 10 last year. They flip-flopped with Baie-Comeau, the London Knights, and the Red Deer Rebels. Any surprises here for you?
Baie-Comeau. I think that losing Eric Veilleux was, you know, very difficult, especially as late as it happened. When I look at Baie-Comeau and think that they've played, you know, in a conference championship last year, a league championship you know, the year before that, you think about the trials and tribulations of being located where they are in a small market, Nathan MacKinnon, that trade, you know, that trade has really worked out for them to be a really good hockey club. I thought that run was going to come to an end at the end of last year, Jeff, but man, Marco Piatanero has really done a nice job with that hockey club, and they're kind of a pain in the rear end. I mean, I don't know if they have enough to go the distance, but they may very well make life miserable for somebody in the Quebec League. Blainville continues to be a surprise for me. You know, Montembeau and goal, I really like what he brings to the table. But Joel Bouchard, he's done an awesome job there. I can't wait to get in there. I think we're in there in early March for back-to-back games. I can't wait. Yeah, to get in there and just pick his brain. Anyone that jumps for you in that in that group?
Baie-Comeau is interesting to the points you mentioned, but it really is amazing what happens when you have a healthy Jeremy Gregoire on your team, the CHL Player of the Week, and he's healthy and he's firing on all cylinders. It shouldn't surprise me, but it should scare teams like the Erie Otters to see what the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds are doing right now, reeling off 8 wins in a row and doing it in impressive form as well. They're in at the number 3 team. I know all the hype. Not just in the Western Conference in the OHL, but the entire OHL or the Erie Otters because of Connor McDavid. But have a look. There's two teams that are ahead of them, the Oshawa Generals, and they continue to beat really good teams. I know Ottawa took them into overtime last night, but the Oshawa Generals is still a juggernaut. And don't look now, but we talked about the Greyhounds and their moves at trade deadline and how they brought in a couple of pieces that could go sideways quickly. And sure, Richie with the high hit the other night, but you Richie and Anthony D'Angelo and Justin Bailey, who's been fantastic. That, to me, is a scary team. So that, to me, is a surprise seeing them up that high, but maybe it shouldn't be considering everything that they did, Kyle Raftus, at the trade deadline. So it's going to be, I mean, listen, we say it every year, playoffs everywhere are going to be fascinating. I just almost, you just want to get started already.
Agreed. Yeah, a lot of people have talked about Sheldon Keefe as being one of the better coaches in the league. He's really going to – it's going to test his mettle with the group he has there right now, but he's got them firing. I think they've won, 8 straight today.
Yep, 8 in a row.
If I'm not mistaken.
8 straight.
Yeah.
8 in a row in impressive fashion.
They're
as
rocking
well.
And rolling.
All right, time for some of your questions. At SNetJunior, that's the handle on the Twitters. This one comes from Hodges Heroes. This is an interesting one, Sam. Who is the next CHL coach to jump straight to the NHL like Mike Johnston did from Portland, of course, to the Pittsburgh Penguins? That's a really interesting question.
Ooh.
Now, hang on. Let me ask you this. Is it unfair to say Dale Hunter, since he's already been an NHL coach?
Yeah, I'm going to cross him off the list. Yep.
All right. So
I think it's unfair to say him. So who's the next guy? Ooh, man. I like that question. Like that question. But is someone going to jump in and be a head guy? I don't know. I mean, you look at Kelly McCrimmon, he's not going to go anywhere. He owns Brandon.
I don't think so.
Bob Bugner went down that road as an assistant with
Columbus.
So I don't think he's really raring and ready to go in that regard. When I look at Darren Rumble and Moncton, who's done an excellent job, I don't know if he's quite ready for that yet. Marco Pitcher, like, you think about all these guys. I mean, if you had to give someone a shot, well, I don't know, wouldn't it be Sean Clouston maybe?
Medicine Hat is a good team every year. And they play a button-down NHL style of defense first when you look at the Medicine Hat Tigers.
I don't know. Is it Ryan McGill? Coming out of Kootenay. Brent Sutter, I don't really count him because he's just come from that area.
Would you count? So for the same reason you don't count Dale Hunter, could you not count Claude Noel in Vancouver?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I don't think I'd count him. Kevin Constantine, a lot of these guys have coached in the NHL.
What about Chris Knobloch?
To be a head guy, I don't think so. I think, and to be honest with you, I think he'd prefer to go to the pro route first, because you don't want to go in there as this hot shot young head coach guy and blow it, and wouldn't be on his doing. But I think with some years of seasoning in the American Hockey League for Chris, it would probably be, or as an assistant coach in the NHL, would probably be better off. I guess Dallas Eakins is the guy that I think about in that regard. You know, he comes in and he's confident and he's saying stuff and he's doing stuff. And, you know, next thing you know, is he going to get a job again as a head coach in the NHL? I think so, but he's probably not feeling great about that opportunity right now. So, man, oh, man. I look at Jim Hiller, who moved out of Tri-Cities job last year to work with Mike Babcock, but as an assistant. Right now, I don't see it. I don't see. Here's one name I'm going to throw your way. Okay. Out of the 60 teams, the one name that I can throw your way right now is Benoit Grue.
Yes.
Canada's World Junior team. I mean, yeah, I could see that being a possibility.
You know, it's funny. I talked to someone about a month ago about Benoit Grue, and the first team that came out of his mouth was, I hear Ottawa's interested.
Well, there shouldn't be a market that knows him any better. I mean, you know, I'm a huge Dave Cameron fan, obviously, so I'd like to see him get his crack that extends beyond an interim thing.
Agreed.
But he'd be the guy, because he's already been to the American Hockey League. I think he's changed as a coach. I think he's a different guy than he was. So he would be probably the number one guy of the 60 teams in the CHL. He'd probably be the number one guy on my list right now.
You know what? And this dovetails our next question, which comes to us from our friend at McKean's and the scout.ca, Brendan Ross, at Rossi Youngblood on Twitter. Which teams are primed to upset? What teams might be in danger of being upset? Much in the same way I always say at Stan Butler's team or a tough out, Benoit Grue's teams in the playoffs are tough. They're hard.
Yep.
Like, if I'm picking an upset team, I think I'm going Gatineau.
Yeah, I like that call, because with Ben being away, they made some trades, they got older, they mortgaged a little bit of their future, and I think that they're a team now that once Ben kind of gets back, settles in, gets rid of the hangover that comes with being a gold medalist, his team's going to be really, really tough. Is there any other upset? Seattle's going to be a fascinating team for me to watch in the WHL's Western Conference, because Barzal just got back. They kind of held the fort down while he was gone. And with him in the lineup, you know, it gives them the scoring punch that they really, really need, because I like the rest of their hockey club. You know, I like their 97 group. They got a lot of good things going on. Let's see. If I look at the Quebec League, I'm just trying to think off the top of my head, is there any big upset teams there? I don't know. I don't think you can consider Baie-Comeau being an upset team right now.
Top 10
the
CHL
St. John's
team.
Seadogs, I think they're – St. John's a contender. Yeah, would you consider that to be an upset team?
St. John's weird. But, well, I mean, St. John is driven for the Memorial Cup in a couple of years. That's the way they're building that program.
Yeah.
However, they floated through the top 10 for the majority of this season. So can we call them a upset team considering they've been in the top 10 for more weeks than they weren't? It
yeah.
feels
Let
like
me throw one at you, Jeff.
All right.
Yeah. Let me throw Niagara at you.
Wow. Marty Williamson, as Stan Butler almost found out again last year, is real good in the playoffs. And we just had Niagara on Sunday afternoon on CHL on Sportsnet. And they looked real good. Now, they didn't exactly beat a team that was stacked in the Belleville Bulls, but when their high-end guys come to play, Brendan Perlini, Carter Verhaeghe, when Josh Hosang is inspired, that can be a really scary offensive group. And if they get the goaltending, given the way that coach can handle his team in the playoffs, maybe Niagara is to the OHL what Gatineau could be to the Q. That's a good point, Sammy.
I think you have to throw Niagara, and I'd say probably their first 15 games. Just throw it out. Because they were waiting to get in the building. You got all that excitement. You got the distractions. You got no Perlini. If you throw the first 15 games out, I'd love to see the record. I haven't done the math on it, but I guarantee you it would be a record that's probably 6 or 7 games above 500 if you threw that, you know, the first month and a half out for Niagara. And to me, that's why they're dangerous, because they're healthy again. They've got two good goaltenders. I think Moran has been pushed by Brandon Hope. I think Hope is a good goaltender, as an overager in his own right. You've got Josh Hosang, who can put up 5 points or be a dash five on any given night. You got Brendan Perlini. I mean, there's a lot of good elements there, right? So Niagara would be, I think, an upset team to consider.
All right, this is one, since you mentioned you travel a lot more than I do and you've been to all these barns. What is the loudest CHL arena? This comes to us from Mitchell. Loudest CHL rink, Sam?
I'm going to go the Robert Gartan Arena in Gatineau, because it's small. The roof is, even I have to duck to get in there at some points when we get in the broadcast booth. And I've been there for some playoff games. I remember going back to the year that Brad Marchand sat out the final game of the season. Halifax against Gatineau, and there's a whole lot of stuff going on back then. But that building, oh my goodness! I mean, ear piercing. And the fans are there at 4:30. They got the Saint-Gon going out in the parking lot. I mean, it's an experience and a half. And you know what? That place is loud. Come playoff time, and on most nights, it's a good barn to be in. But I'd say that's probably the loudest for me, I guess, per capita. Based on size of building. You have any favorites that you've been into that's
London.
Been super loud?
I mean, London is always biased, just coming off of the Memorial Cup last year. And it's a big barn, close to 10,000 people in it. When they're inspired for the team in green, that's a pretty loud barn. I remember being there for the 2005 Cup run, and that was probably the loudest junior barn I'd ever been in.
I got one more for you, Jeff. How about
All right, go.
You've never been to Everett, and I keep telling you?
No, never been. Everett. Never been.
Oh,
really, eh?
When they were battling back in the mid-2000s, like around 06, 07, when Vancouver was making its run to the Cup and Everett had Kyle Beach, and, you know, he was all over Milan Lucic, and there'd close to 8,000 in that barn, and they're crazy. Those people are crazy. If you get a chance to go to Everett to watch a game, you have to go. It's awesome. I know Seattle was in there, I think, a week and a half or 2 weeks ago, and the place was sold out, and even Kevin Constantine was looking forward to that game.
That's awesome. All right, so there you go. There's your travel tips, ladies and gentlemen, courtesy of Sam Cosentino. Okay, last one here. I want to find this because this has been a kind of a source of contention for a lot of people. This one comes to us from Matt Walker. Is Kraus the real deal, or is he the benefactor of being the size of a man in a league of boys? I'm a big fan of Lawson Kraus. Dan Marr was on last week on the podcast talking about how the difference between a player like Kraus and Mitch Marner is Kraus has to manufacture everything himself, which is why you don't see the big numbers attached to him. But where are you at on Lawson Kraus of the Frontenacs?
Real deal. Men, boys, doesn't matter. I think this guy has a real strong chance of playing in the National Hockey League next year, and has you know, obviously size has something to do with it. Great skating ability, thinks the game unbelievably well, and has the skill set to go along with his ability to think it. He's got great self-awareness. He knows where he's going to fit into a lineup, as he did with Canada's World Junior team. So say whatever you want against, you know, playing against younger guys. He's still only 17 years old, so there's a lot more strength, muscle to put on that frame. If this guy plays, you know, once he gets to about 22 years old in the National Hockey League at about 220 or 225, look out, he's going to be a menace. He's the real deal. Don't even think twice about it. He's probably going to go in the top seven, probably higher than that, and there's a good chance he sticks in the National Hockey League next year.
All right, there you go, the final word on Lawson Crouse. And that's the final word on the podcast. Thanks to everyone who downloaded it, either at sportsnet.ca or at iTunes. Thank you for the support. Tweet in your questions, more answers next week. And on behalf of Sam and our producer, Matt Brown, thanks for tuning in. This has been another edition of Junior. We'll talk to you in 7 days. In the meantime, don't forget, Friday Night Hockey, the Erie Otters and the Kingston Frontenacs, Sunday afternoon. Those same Erie Otters facing off against the Ottawa 67s. Either hear you here next year, next week, or we'll see you on television Friday and Sunday for CHL on Sportsnet. We'll talk to you then.